It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them... Yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Ground ball off the glove of IKF, and the Cubs take the lead. Incredible. Kiner Falefa not able to even knock it down, and Bethancourt has given the Cubs an 11-10 lead, and they've got to remove Bednar. Unbelievable. One-two pitch. And one of the worst losses in the history of the Pittsburgh Pirates today. Historic.
Greg Brown has been the Pirates' primary play-by-play man alongside Lanny Fratteri going back to 1993. And so he has been here now for more than 20 years. And in that time, he has seen 4 winning seasons. 2013, 2014, 2015, and then I think they had a winning season 18. Again in 18.
Yep.
So that means he has seen way more losing baseball than winning baseball. And there is a melancholy Greg Brown after that game saying, this is one of the worst losses in Pirates history. It was the worst loss suffered by any team in baseball this season. Teams trailing by 7 or more after 6 innings this baseball season were 0-353. And the Pirates become the first to blow that lead, to blow the touchdown lead with 3 innings left, 9 outs to get. How about this stat, Mulsey? 41 runs were scored by the Cubs in this 3-game series. That's the most ever scored against the Pirates in a 3-game series in Pittsburgh.
That even includes a series where the Brewers beat them 20-0.
Yeah, in 2010.
28 of those runs, if you were to do this, I wonder how many times in a 3-game series in Pittsburgh they have allowed even 28 runs. That's how many their bullpen gave up, earned runs.
And Rowdy Tellez was one of their better relievers. His ERA was lower than David Bednar this homestand.
Well, that, I mean, there's a big crowd of people gathered at the my ERA is lower than David Bednar's party.
Probably more people than were at PNC Park for first pitch yesterday.
If it wasn't for the White Sox having approximately 74 people at a game... it would have looked really bad for them yesterday.
Pony, or the A's. The A's are playing in front of flies and
you know who's pitching out lights out for them? Osvaldo Beto right now.
I know.
Beto shuffle.
I saw that.
Unreal. I'm sure we all kind of saw that graphic.
Beto. Oh.
I have a couple of quick thoughts. One is we always laugh about how Lanny Fratteri used to chide Greg for saying this is unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Yesterday was actually an appropriate use of unbelievable, basically, in a bad way. There's something that I did think would happen. I don't know if it was because it's the vibe that's created when I'm like sitting with you, we're good buddies in addition to being coworkers, we're watching this happen to them in real time. I'm almost glad it happened.
Why is that?
If they just win normally 10-3 or 10-5, you say, okay, solid start by Skeens and the bats woke up, right? There's no story there. There's no call to action.
O'Neill Cruz. Everything went swimmingly.
Yeah, uneventful
for the most
game.
Part.
We'd be
back here at Studio B, hiccup to start. Pirates had several late in yesterday's game. Mulsey was saying that there was actually a silver lining to that loss.
There was no call to action if they just win the game, and I came away from it starting to think to myself, I'm glad that this happened to them because maybe it's going to wake up people. Maybe it's going to get Bob Nutting's attention. This is so bad. You're the laughingstock of baseball for this game. You lost in just hideous gut-wrenching, pathetic fashion. You've got Livy Dunn, the easily more famous half of the duo between she and Paul Skeens. She's much more famous than he is on a national level. Tweeting a GIF, just essentially making fun of and also expressing incredulity at your baseball team. And I am hopeful that something like this, sometimes you need a kick in the pants like this, something as ugly as yesterday's loss, there's a little bit of hope in me that it wakes up and gets through to a lot of people that what has happened is unacceptable, that Derek Shelton is an unacceptable manager to have for this team, and that as much as you might want to credit Ben Cherington for putting together a pitching staff that looks good at the top end of the starting rotation, he has presided over the building of a team, of an overall roster, that's pretty terrible, if we're being brutally honest. While I got to watch Henry Davis once again trying to pull off every ball pitched to him. So I'm hoping that it gets through to people who can actually make decisions.
So I went on a fact-finding mission this morning before coming into work, driving out here to Studio B. By the way, Pat Narduzzi is going to join us in a half hour to preview the Pitt football season. There's news on Pitt today from one of college football's biggest insiders. I went on a fact-finding mission because when you have the wreckage of a loss like this, you know, I want to do a thorough examination of what the hell is going on. So I asked, I would say, a half dozen people the same questions today. Are big changes coming? Are big changes looming? And I'm going to give you the consensus answer on one guy. The GM, Ben Cherington. Every single person I talked to who is affiliated in one way or another with the Pirates all said the same thing. He's going to be back in 2025. There are 30 games left. This team is in a tailspin. He's been the GM since 2020. Every single person told me that he's going to be back. No caveat, no qualifier, no, well, let's see how September goes. If this guy continues to play poorly, if some of these young players continue like a Henry Davis to scuffle, he's in hot water. None of that. They all said the same thing. Cherington is back.
Hate that. So your fact-finding mission has already succeeded in frustrating me.
Now, do you want to ask me about Shelton?
No, because I have a feeling there's a reason you said Cherrington's back first, and it's because Shelton ain't back.
I did not get any kind of guarantees on him, and I'm just going to leave it at that. So draw your own conclusions. Well, I'm drawing my own off of that. I'm not saying he's gone. I'm not saying it's fait accompli, he's going to be fired. I'm not saying it's going to happen overnight. I'm not saying he signed, sealed, delivered out the door. I'm just saying people are very quick to ensure Ben Cherington's job security in future with the team. Not so much Shelton.
He's in over his head. It's been proven. He's had 1 month to manage meaningful baseball games for this team. Trade deadline was what, the 30th, not the 31st, correct?
Yep.
Here are their splits. Win-loss splits.
They were three games over 500 at that point in the season.
Their record by month, they were 15-10 in July. They had played seven games over, actually, in June and July, Pony. 29-22. Pretty good, actually. Pretty good. They're 7-18 in August. I don't have the numbers in front of me. That's a .280 winning percentage. That's probably one of the worst months in recent team history. Probably up there with like September 2012 when they really went in the tank.
Or how about when they collapsed and got Hurdle and Huntington fired?
Sure. Any of those months you could
2019, cite. They were brutal.
I want to stress that these 25 games that they've played so far in August are, by orders of magnitude, the most meaningful and significant games Derek Shelton has ever managed at any level. And he's failed miserably. He's revealed himself to be in over his head. And they are still a pretty bad offensive team. That's still one of the through lines here. I know we could talk about bullpen and other things. Andy Haynes is his guy. Their inability to hit them, and he's a hitting coach himself by trade. A lot of their problems with run scoring or lack thereof trace back to him. Forget about the fact that he doesn't know how to manage a bullpen. The very fundamental problem that this team had, where just not enough of its players are good hitters, can at least be placed somewhat at his feet. He shouldn't be back. He's been touchy with his answers. He's been very defensive. He hasn't been willing to even give a straight answer on a straightforward question that's pretty easy yesterday about Bednar's future.
Yeah.
It should be easy to say David's not going to close for a while. Even if you haven't talked to anyone about it, just say it. The people want to hear it, and he won't do that.
But what is your reaction to the thought among people affiliated with the Pirates that Cherington isn't going anywhere.
I'm frustrated by it. I am, because I think that there's, I think you've brought this up, and I think that you're wrong insofar as I think you're speaking for what a lot of people there feel. I think there's this perception that if you blow out a GM after you had some promising signs be shown, specifically your pitching, really, and Cruz is ultimately going to end up having, it looks like, a pretty good offensive year, right? He's on, I give him a lot of credit. He's battled through.
Wasn't traded for by Cherington, but I would say largely developed by the Pirates.
Yes. And I mean, the bottom line is he's looking like, Cherington looks validated with the idea that he said, hey, this guy lost a whole year to injury. You have to give him time. He's played better and better as the year's gone on. I think there are a lot of people that look at that and say, you can't blow up this whole operation here. You can't fire
the GM. When you say a lot of people, are you talking about like inside baseball, like within the Pirates? Because I don't think fans feel that way right now.
I think fans feel more the way I do. Get this guy the hell out of here. But you have, I think, functionally spoken for just by giving your own opinion on the matter, the way a lot of people inside that organization definitely feel about him, which is he's done enough good to keep his job. It would be very jarring and drastic to get rid of him. I just personally don't think that that's the case. He has been on the job a long time already. He's going to be entering year, six next year?
Yeah.
What do they really have? Where's the progress, Pony? It's not going to be in wins and losses this year. They're not getting to 76 wins. I would bet you a healthy amount of money.
Well, even if they did, then that would still be stagnation. It would be the same thing as last year.
Gear shifts in neutral, or at studio be at Bowser.
There's some beautiful trucks in here, boy.
Getting to this very large truck here and filling the place with
Doran Dickerson in here buying a vehicle today. Let's give it up for Doran. Congratulations on all his success.
It would be me getting in this very large, very impressive looking truck, being handed the keys, putting that thing in neutral, and slamming the gas pedal as hard as I could, going nowhere in the process. I don't think that being scared of what's on the other side if you have to replace your general manager is a good enough reason to keep a guy that I think has done in balance a very bad job. Very bad job. And I say that full well understanding and being somewhat sympathetic to the lack of resources he has relative to most of his peers.
I don't think he's done a very bad job. I think he's done more bad than good. I think if I'm going to keep tally on things, I would say the bad does outweigh the good right now. But I don't think it's so overwhelming that I think that he's an awful general manager, and I'm completely convinced that he's not the right guy for the job. I'm close to that, but to me, it's easier to fire the manager and his coaching staff and start over there than it is to do a complete reboot and just get rid of the entire front office and start from scratch. I'm not there yet. And I know a lot of fans are, and you sound like you are. And if people out there are listening and hearing, what, Cherington safe? This is insane, and want to call in and say 412-928-9370, that's ridiculous. That's your prerogative, and that's you exercising your voice as a fan. But copacetic is the wrong word, but I will tolerate at the end of the year if the manager and his people are scapegoats. You keep the pitching coach and you bring in another manager and you give Ben one more swing at it. Nutting gave Huntington the opportunity to fire John Russell and replace him with Clint Hurdle, and that worked out. And I would say at the time that Neil did it, the Pirates weren't very far along. They had just lost 100-plus games, and it wasn't his first year on the job. He had been here since what? November of 2007?
Correct.
Right?
Yeah,
So he had three seasons, which are not as many as five. I get that. But still, when he was allowed to make a managerial change, the Pirates were the worst team in baseball. They're not that now. They do have some pieces to work with.
And how close are they to being like a competitive team is the question. One of my favorite stats that people have brought up this year to support my end of this, which is that Ben Cherington has not really done that good of a job. When people have made the 2012 comp, and by the way, if this was supposed to be a win urgently season, because Bob Nutting said that it was, not a lot of urgency here so far being shown. If you only blow out the manager and the general manager keeps his job. But anyway, a stat that's been used is people have compared this to the 2012 team. Internally, I think they felt like they were the 2012 team. I will point out again, that team's high watermark, Pony, was 73-57. So 130 games.
And they won, 79 games?
Right. They cratered.
They went 79-82?
83, yeah.
I thought for some reason there was a game that didn't get finished that year.
No, 82-79 in 2018. Okay. That was the team that didn't play 162. But I think their high watermark, I looked it up, was 16 games over, and I believe it was 73-57. They cratered in all-time fashion. We get that. But being 16 games over meant that they had shown like a level of good play that this team hasn't even come close to showing. You know what their high water mark over 500 is after that first week of the season, basically? Three games.
Donnie, if the people I'm talking to are being honest about the Pirates and saying Ben Cherington's got nothing to worry about, he's going to be back in 2025, how does that make you feel?
I'm oddly on the same page there. I actually think, which I know you kind of got to, Pony, that maybe it's like a lesser of the two evils type deal, however you want to look at it. I think that Cherington is not doing as poorly as what Shelton is doing. I think Shelton is the one that's going to be and should be on the chopping block, and there is a little bit more rope for Ben Cherington to work.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them... Yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center... Keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
With.
There is precedent for the Pirates blowing out their brain trust, their manager and GM, after a collapse. 2019, Pirates at the 110-game mark were 44-46. So they were an average baseball team. They were a mediocre team in mid-July, 44-46. They ended up losing 93 games. 93 games that season. Clint Hurdle was told the last day of the year that he would not be back and said, well, I'm out of here. He got on a little golf cart in his Hawaiian shirt, waved goodbye to everybody, and then they threw Tom Prince out there to manage the last game of the season. And they were paid a lot of money to go away. People sometimes don't remember that. Have selective memories when it comes to the Bucks. That's what happened that day. And I think those guys were what, owed $18 million or something like that, Mulsey?
I know the buyout was eight figures, and that's one time where I've said, and I do think our listeners get worked up so much about frustration with Bob Nutting that the guy yesterday who said they're not going to fire any of these guys, they're going to keep them in perpetuity, Skeens is gone for this year. Bob, to his credit in that specific instance, paid to make people he had decided weren't going to be part of the solution go away. And for his standards, I think paid a lot of money, an uncomfortable amount of money, to make those guys go away.
But people close to the Pirates are saying that Ben Cherington will be back next year. I'm not hearing the same things on Derek Shelton. I'm not hearing he's going to be fired, but it might, this is just my opinion, it might come down to what the team does the rest of the year with him, if he's going to survive this and get a sixth year.
I don't think that Derek Shelton could do enough down the stretch. What? They got 29 games. They go 20-9.
They got to be Hurdle's 2007 Rockies.
They just go 29-0 and they win the wild card with 90 wins or whatever it is. 90 wins. Come on, man. The problem with him is, I described this on the sports call last night. He does feel like a substitute teacher attitude-wise. He feels like, you know, when you have a tough-ass teacher in school and then they're out for a day and there's a sub. The sub just comes in and everything.
No doubt.
That's the vibe.
I totally agree. Whenever the manager and the players after games have to talk about sticking together and keeping together and sticking together and keeping together, that tells me that there's growing concern that they're not. Why would you need to say it?
Why would you need to speak it? When Yasmani says, don't give up on us, it's like, wait, is that because some guys you know have given up already? Not even fans, but the club?
412-928-9370. We are about 10 minutes away from Pat Narduzzi joining us. He is named the starting quarterback for the game on Saturday, and it's a surprising choice. Let's go to the phones and get your thoughts on this Pirates collapse and the all-time collapse yesterday at PNC Park and what it might mean for the futures of Cherington and Derek Shelton, what you would do if you were calling the shots. 412-928-9370. Going to begin with Ed in McMurray. Hello, Ed.
How are we doing today?
We're okay, Ed.
I'd say they both have to go.
Yeah.
No accountability on the field for Shelton. When you continually do the things that O'Neal Cruz does and some of the other ball players do, where leadoff double, ball hit to his right, down six runs, he breaks for third. Are you kidding me? Automatic out. And then you have the perfect situation. You're getting your rear ends kicked anyway. Sit your rear end down, think about what you did, and we'll get him tomorrow.
So if he were more of a disciplinarian, you'd be a fan of Shelton?
No.
Oh, well, then you're describing something for him to do, and it still wouldn't win you over, Ed.
Yeah, there's nothing. Like, the overthrows from the outfield, the stupid base running mistakes, the mental errors that just continually pile up, that turn into physical errors, can't do it anymore. And then you get into Cherington, you know, he's responsible for the minor leagues, correct?
They do have, according to, there's a bunch of different places that rank minor league systems, but the consensus seems to be right now that the Pirates do not have a very good one.
27th, I've seen. I've seen them as low as 27th.
How is that possible? And I know a lot of these guys were drafted and pushed through the minor leagues like Davis and Skeens pretty fast, but you've been so bad for long enough where I would think you'd have a loaded minor league system right
you
now.
See, you know of the Northside Notch guy, right?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
That's a big problem. Mark against Cherington staying on as general manager right there.
Jim Rosati had Northside Notch had a tweet.
I like Jim Rosati. I don't know him, but he sounds like someone that would have hung out with me. Mamma mia, Jim Rosati. You know, sounds like someone family would have.
Do you
been
know what
into.
You two could bond over? I did a
podcast. Oh, a paisan, a Jimmy Rosati.
Jimmy Rosati. Hey, yeah. no, I did. I appeared on his podcast years ago. And just chopped
one
it up
and done,
a little bit.
Didn't get invited back?
I think they were just trying to have me on once. He's from Louisville, so you know what you could bond over him with?
Bourbons.
Oh, yeah, the bourbons. No, but I'll just paraphrase his tweet because I can't find it right off the top of my head. He did a stat, like a deep dive, on from all the just forget about even like just the minor leagues, like domestic, the draft, the Rule 4 draft, all their international signings. Like, they have gotten nothing.
Well, the Latin American director just got fired, and I think they had produced, like, three guys in the last 8 years, something crazy like that. The only guy on the team right now who came out of that Dominican Academy is Luis Ortiz, and they have poured millions of dollars into that thing.
They really have one of the absolute worst international records, and, like, the last couple of years you can't say anything yet because guys haven't debuted. They've, like, produced, I think, negative war over the last 7 years from that. How is that possible?
I know. They made such a big deal about that when they built it 15 years ago.
You have to be good at these things.
Yep.
You can't afford to suck at that part of it.
Jim is on the fan. Hello, Jim.
Hey, guys. Yeah, I just wanted to say I think Derek Shelton should definitely be fired. I'm okay with Cherington staying around.
Why are you okay with Cherington? What's the main reason you immediately would go to, I am okay with Cherington staying around?
Because I don't want a complete reboot. You know, I see some things going
but
in the right
like saying
direction.
To stay in a bad in my opinion, that's just my opinion. That is like saying I'm going to stay in a bad relationship that's going nowhere because I'm afraid of being single.
Jim, are you a married man?
Right. I am.
How long?
For about 10 years.
Any advice on what makes it work?
Knowing when to just let the woman have her way, pretty much.
We'll put you on hold and give you tickets to the Renaissance Festival.
That's Josh Miller's ultimate marriage advice. He said,
I love it, Jim.
He said, I tried to win one big argument and get my way, but I would sacrifice dozens of little arguments for that one big
one. So win the war and then lose tons of little battles.
Yeah,
huh?
Josh said he would lose every skirmish, but when the artillery actually came out, he felt like he had to win.
The Fan Hotline is presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC writer for over 50 years. Saturday at noon, Pitt football back on our airwaves, hosting Kent State. Our next guest will be on the sidelines for his 10th season here in Pittsburgh. And that is Pat Narduzzi, who joins us right now as we come from you at Studio B, Bowser Chevrolet. Bowser, a proud supporter of Pitt Athletics. Pat, Andrew Filippone, and Chris Muller, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing outstanding. How are you guys doing?
We're good, Pat. Do you get the same way everybody? I know you got the anxiety because you got your team getting ready to get out there. There's always the healthy nerves. What do I have? How are these guys going to respond? But does the heralding of college football season returning get you fired up like it does everybody else? We've all got the bug right now, Pat.
No doubt about it. You know, I'm looking, you know, I wake up on a Thursday morning and I know we got practice. But I'm looking to see what games are on later tonight so you can watch. You know, I probably watch different than you. You guys are watching, see who's making a play and all that. I'm watching game management, you know, things. Why did you do that? All the different things coaches think about. And just to watch a game on a Thursday night and Friday night, to me, is like practice. You know, it's like, you know, just practicing. What would I do here situationally? But, no, it's exciting. I think there's not a coach in the country that doesn't get excited about college football starting up and get excited about Thursday games, Friday games, and Saturday games.
Pat, let's go with the newsy topic here. Eli Holstein, the transfer from Alabama, you've named him the starting quarterback for Saturday's game against Kent State. Why the newcomer?
You know what? What an easy decision, you know, deciding who was going to start, because, you know, both Eli and Nate are both two very talented, very intelligent quarterbacks. You know, it just came down to just some of the details you saw in practice that, you know, we had to, you know, finally make a decision. We had to start somebody. And we just figured, you know, looking at it, you know, we thought, you know, Eli should get the chance based on just, you know, all the details in practice and what we saw out of him going into this this opener.
Pat, how was his process as far as winning over new teammates, kind of assimilating into the room? Because I think that's always a tough thing when anybody transfers. But he's a guy who's, what, a redshirt freshman. How did he do about, you know, go about winning over his teammates and just kind of the practice habits that he showed?
Yeah, I mean, you know, both those quarterbacks worked their tails off, and I think they got great relationships with the team. You know, I have, you know, it's not something I look at. We're going to try to play the best quarterback, get the best guy that we feel can help us win a football game and put him out there. But, you know, both of them have great relationships with our football team. I think our football team would have been happy with either one of them starting. But, you know, for a new guy to come in and kind of, you know, do what he's done as far as just the relationship he does have with the wideouts and the running backs and the O-line, is impressive. He's a guy that went from really last spring having no votes on our Eagle Council, you know, just a new guy, to where, you know, he's
on
our leadership
council. You got, that's the leadership, our Eagle guys?
Yeah, our leadership council. We call them the Eagles. Okay. But, yeah, but, you know, he was voted onto that thing, and his votes just continue to go up. So I think, you know, that's an indication that our players had faith in what he was doing. And Nate's on that same you know, leadership group. So, it's impressive. We've got two of our best players on our team on that council.
Now, is there a very shadowy head of the Eagle Council who gets to make all the decisions and has final say? Other than you, is there a player who's wielding a ton of power and influence in there above all else, Pat?
No, I don't think so. I think, you know, that whole group, you know, it's 15 guys that are voted on by the team, and they all have a say. I mean, we're going to listen to them all, and we, you know, have good discussions in those meetings. The big thing is, you know, in that group, it's discussions. It's bringing stuff up, bringing it to the table. If there's something going on that they want to talk about as a team, whether, hey, I'm too rough on them and practice is too hard, whatever it is, you know, I expect those guys to bring stuff up to me, you know, how the team's feeling in different situations. And so it's, you know, there's, you know, I don't think there's any power struggle. You know, our players know it's their team. You know, I'm just a head coach, and our coaches are just assistant coaches. We're only as good as the leadership on our football team.
Pat, you know, I'm a straight shooter, so I'm not going to BS you here. I don't think your quarterback play has been very good the last 2 years. So what gives you confidence or makes you think that this year will be different?
Yeah, you know, it's a great question. And again, you're probably right. I would probably disagree with you. I think last year, you know, you're right on. I think the year before, I think Keaton Slovis was pretty darn good if you dug in deep and really watched him. But you know, I thought he was a pretty sharp guy. But you know, what gives me faith is, you know, I say this every week, you know, win or lose, that it's a team effort, it's a team win, or it's a team loss. And you know, you can always, you know, the media can always point the fingers at the quarterback and say, what is he doing? You know, when you point your fingers, there's always, you know, three or four of them pointing right back at yourself. And, you know, it's what we do to put our kids in position. You know, it's our job as coaches to put those quarterbacks, those receivers, those defensive backs, and those linebackers, whatever it may be, in position to make plays. So, you know, you talk about the last 2 years. I mean, obviously, you know, you're looking at, you know, you're going back to 2021 when, you know, we won an ACC championship. Everybody would like to, you know, raise that trophy above our heads and let that confetti fall down on us. And when you got great quarterback play, that's what you're going to get. You know, certainly was a drop off from 21 to 22, 23. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's a hard guy to find. Everybody would like to have one of those dudes sitting back in the pocket. That's a leader and a great football player and a great person. So, we feel like we've got two guys like that. And again, it's our job to make those guys better. It's our job to put them in position to be successful as quarterbacks and receivers. And we'll be better at that. And that's something, you know, that we made some changes in the offseason to make sure we fix too.
I want to ask you about those offseason changes, because one thing you said last year during the decisions that went into whether it was Christian or Jerkovic or Nate Yarnell is that you would say at your press conferences, hey, this is Coach Cignetti's decision on quarterback. He made the decision. Are you changing that process now, Pat? Are you now, when it comes to who plays after Saturday's game, they're both going to play. But as far as the next game at Cincinnati, is that going to be a Pat Narduzzi decision now?
No, I think you got to still lean on your coordinators. And again, you know, it comes down to trust, right? And sometimes you lose trust and you're like, okay, you know, if we were in the same situation as we were last year and, you know, we had the same staff here, I'd probably making the decision. But, you know, as a head coach, you know, I'm dealing with different stuff in my office while the quarterbacks are meeting. I don't meet in with the quarterbacks every day. I don't have the inside knowledge of what goes on in that quarterback, nor do I, you know, micromanage what's happening in the O-line meeting room or the, you know, punt returner, who's that guy going to be, who's going to be our, you know, starting D tackles. I give our coaches ownership of that, and they better make good decisions on that. But it'll still be Cade's decision. You know, we had long discussions over the weekend and through this week, just kind of what we were thinking, what's your thoughts, what's my thoughts, and did a great job, you know, discussing just kind of, you know, where we were and what we thought would give us the best opportunity to roll out there and get a W and give this team a chance to win a championship game. And that's what it comes down to. But ultimately, you know, if it's like I think one way and the quarterback coach thinks the other, and I think strongly about it, then, you know, you're always going to take that veto power. And, you know, that's what happened a year ago. You know, it just took a little longer than we'd like. But we also knew that, you know, I felt a year ago we had one quarterback, and, you know, number two was not ready, and number three was on the scout team not getting many reps because we didn't rep three quarterbacks. We're repping three quarterbacks now, getting those guys, you know, game ready. So it's a little bit different, you know, preparation for as far as, you know, how Coach Bell does it compared to what we've done in the past. And you know, that decision will be, you know, a joint decision. But I'm leaning on my coordinator because he's sitting in that room. But I'm going to ask him tough questions. About like why, you know, why this, why him, why this guy, you know, and I think that's important.
Pat, I also endeavor to be a straight shooter like Andrew and get right to the point. So I'll say this, in your first 9 years at Pitt, I think you've always been a guy that's had sort of a pro style approach to offense and defense. They have to be complementary. You don't want to gas out your defense with an offense that's going with tempo. So how much do you feel right now that this is almost a step out of your comfort zone to bring in Cade Bell and have an offense that he features that I've heard described as hyper-tempo?
Mm.
How comfortable are you, or how much of a step out of the comfort zone for you is that to have a guy who's going to be running that kind of up-tempo attack?
Yeah, I'm very, very comfortable with it. You know, I think it makes our defense better, first of all. It prepares us for really what we see during the season. You know, depending on how fast it is. But, you know, to me, if you can, you know, if you can play defense when the offense is snapping in 7 seconds, then you can, you know, you can play it against anybody. A team that's wandering around, you feel like it's a halftime between each play. So I'm very comfortable. And again, if you go back to, you know, 2020 and 21, we were tempo a lot in those games. If you kind of think back there, I know you two are getting really old now. I'm just kidding you, as you know. But
I feel really old when I look at Cade. He's 31.
Yeah, he's younger than us, Pat.
Way younger than us, Pat. That's another departure.
No gray hair. No receding hairline either.
Yeah, you got that right. But we did a lot of tempo back then as well. And again, here's the thing. You know what buries a defense? Going three and out, okay? But when an offense, whether they're going tempo or going slow and huddling up, as long as you're moving the sticks and you got more than a three-play drive, you get a couple first downs, the defense has got a rest. So that doesn't bother me. You know, I know Coach Bates and the defense staff will be excited. You know, putting points on the board gives the defense energy, even if it's a, you know, it's a one-play drive for an 80-yard touchdown. The defense will have to suck it up, and we'll be ready to go.
I like Coach Bates. When I did the spring game with you guys, I thought he wanted to hire me. He loved my enthusiasm.
I think he did. I thought he offered you a job, and you turned it
down. Yeah, well,
I couldn't say no
working with Chris every day.
Pat, the only thing Pony was lacking for that job was literally all of the knowledge required to do it properly. Other than that, he was a great candidate.
Yeah, I could give a pregame speech, that's for sure. Pat, you said before this season, you're like Bill Belichick. You just want to coach football. You're a ball coach.
I
saw a quote that said you're like Belichick or Tomlin. Is that... Am I misquoting you? That you said something along those lines, or no?
Yeah, I don't ever remember myself comparing myself to Mike Tomlin or Belichick.
Okay.
But you guys made stuff up. But you know,
I just mean in that you're a football X's and O's guy. I think is what the statement meant. And so, what I want to know is what happens when recruits and current players ask you about getting paid. How does that conversation go now in 2024 in this day and age?
You know, we haven't talked to our general manager, okay, which I got a GM just like, Belichick had and Coach Tomlin has. You know, I want to coach football.
Yep.
And, you know, all those topics are great. And we got the new House bill coming out or the House settlement coming out. That's something during recruiting that, you know, I'll get into a little bit. But when we're in a season, there's no negotiation right now. We're into, you know, playing football, coaching football, and I like to teach the game and focus on, you know, winning games and not worry about all that other stuff.
Have you noticed any difference in, like, the cohesiveness of a team in this era of college football? Or once it all gets down to brass tacks and you're out there on the field and you're with these guys, do you feel like it more or less feels like it always has in that regard, Pat?
I think it feels like it always is. You know, when I'm around our guys, which is at practice and meetings and team meetings, you know, individual meetings, you know, you don't hear about any of that. Now, you know, are they talking about it, you know, on a Thursday night back in their apartments? Are they talking about it in the locker room? You know, I'm not rolling through the locker room and living where the kids live, but I'm sure there's a little bit of talk here and there. I hope there's not too much of it. You know, to me, it's about the team. It's always about the team. It's not about, you know, me, what's good for me. And I think if you got all the me stuff and look, you know, me, I, then we got issues. But I think, you know, I think that's part of college football out there nowadays. And we try to get out of our locker. A few years ago when it first came up, you know, our kind of a motto was, you know, we, not me. And we'll still, continue to talk about it, talk about being selfless and you know, caring about our team more than we do ourselves.
Pat, is this era of college football good for Pitt in that way? I mean, I don't want to lead the witness and try to bait you into an answer, but we saw Washington in the national championship game last year, a TCU the year before. It's not just Georgia versus Ohio State every year now, at least the last 2 years. The new rules, the transfer portal and the NIL opened it up more for teams like Pitt, in your opinion.
Yeah, I think the number of playoff spots has opened it up, right? I mean, you know, you got an opportunity to host a home game. You got a chance to be one of those 12 teams now. And back in 21, you know, you win an ACC championship. You are in the playoffs. Pittsburgh is in the playoffs. And, you know, if you're ranked in the top 12, you got a chance to be in there as well. But, you know, the number one guaranteed way of getting in those playoffs is to be an ACC champion, a conference champion. And that's, you know, that's always the goal here is to be a champion. We've been to that game twice. We've won it once. And our guys knew what that was like in 21, and they want to go back and do it again.
Pat, I do this, I think, every year when we have this conversation, and I always feel like I'm putting you on the spot, but I always think you deliver with an answer, and that's this question. There's obviously a lot of talk about the quarterback position on the message boards out there amongst Pitt fans. It was going to be Yarnell or Holstein. Who's it going to be? Give us one guy to watch that hasn't been talked about, that's really opened your eyes, that you've been impressed with throughout these practices and ramping up to the season, a player kind of you want to shout out a little bit here who you think's done a good job and gotten on your radar in a good way that Pitt fans should be paying close attention to.
A new guy. It's interesting. You guys know some of the older guys. It's a hard question because I hope there's a lot of guys that we can maybe put into that category.
And I heard you last night with Larry Richard. You went through the entire 90-man roster, Pat. You gave him almost 100 names when breaking down
the
roster. You don't
want to hear the 90-man roster? I'm going to just, again, it's just throwing it out there. Yeah. I'm going to just point out a guy, and again, we know Dejon Reynolds. I'm going to get through the 90-man roster here. And Kanate Mumfield, what they do at the receiver spot, and Kenny Johnson, just looking around. I mean, the one guy that maybe, not getting as much love is and we'll find out on game day, is Ralphiel Poppy Williams, nicknamed Poppy. He's an electric guy that has practiced his tail off. I'm looking forward to watching him operate. Again, I've seen him in practice only, so I'm looking forward to seeing him in a live game get it done. Mm-hmm. But that's one guy on offense I think is worth taking a peek at on game day and seeing what he does. And then defensively, I would say Cruz Brookins is a guy you haven't seen a ton from, but a safety that is a ball hawk. He's a great football player. He's a Pittsburgh guy, Whipple guy, that I think he's going to turn some heads this year on defense somewhere.
Did EJ Borghetti or someone in Pitt Communications, when Deion Sanders trolled you at his season opening press conference, did they pass along that quote or clip to you, Pat? Did it get on your radar?
No one sends clips to me because they know I'm not going to look at it and waste my time. But now, I'm just focused on our football team and what we're doing here. We're focused on just winning football games in Pittsburgh.
No war of words here. I like that. You're not bothering with
that. It's all about ball, Pony.
So how about this, Pat, as a way of ending this? So we are at Studio B, Bowser Chevrolet. Gary Bowser and the team here built an amazing facility for us to do. We play away games. We come out here, and this is our home away from home. So Gary's been getting on my case to get you out here for a show. So how about this? If you win the Backyard Brawl this year in the off season, will you come out here and co-host a show with me and Chris?
Heck yeah, no doubt about it.
Let's go.
What I wanted to hear, Pat.
Hey, the power of Bowser. Who's better than Gary Bowser? Let me ask you. Who? Anybody? I mean, that guy's phenomenal, and I'm glad he built up your studios over there for you.
Yep.
Love Gary Bowser, and as long as EJ lets me. I mean, I gotta ask permission from EJ if he'll let me host a show with you guys. But we've been out to the studio. We've sat down. I've sat in those chairs before.
Unfettered for 4 hours.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about all sorts of stuff.
Four hours?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Full show. The cost of
being right. Hey, you're on that sideline for 4 hours in some of these.
Well, if you want to beat West Virginia that bad, Pat, you will come out here and do a show with us this offseason. All right, brother. Hey, good to catch up with you. Good luck on Saturday. Beat Kent State, and we'll talk again soon, okay?
Thanks, Pat.
Hey. Thanks for having me on, and hail to Pitt, guys.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes.
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Horse wrap pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.